This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod.
Welcome back to Wells Tech, episode 502, recorded on Wednesday, June 21st, 2017. Wells Tech is a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. We do this each and every week. And when I say we, I mean me and Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am awesome. Good morning. And thank you for recording on a Wednesday. It's been a special week for us here in the Draper household. We had a wedding over the weekend.
That doesn't happen every day or every weekend, does it?
No, it doesn't. And I'm glad because it's a lot of work, but it was a really lovely event. And then we packed the kids up and moved them up to their first apartment up at the University of North Dakota in Grand Forks, where they are both attending college.
And congratulations. So this was middle son. You have an older son who is going to do the same thing later this summer. So you get to do this all over again.
They're giving me a little bit of a break. But yeah, August 12th will be here soon enough. And our oldest son is marrying a lovely young lady. We'll be celebrating in the Milwaukee area for that one. That's where her home congregation
is. Travel over by us for that. Awesome.
That's
looking
right.
Forward to that. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. And congratulations are in order for you as you look forward in just, three or four days to a wedding in your family as well.
Yep. We're marrying off the last one. Our baby daughter is getting married. She's not so small anymore, 23 years old. So
congrats.
Very happy for her and happy to gain another member of the family. Nice young man. So
that's awesome. Well, very good. Blessings on that.
All right. So I suppose we should dive into our podcast. Just a reminder to everybody listening that we are kind of running through an abbreviated version of the podcast these summer months, a little lighter fare, focusing on a ministry resource. And just a couple other things that we normally do in the podcast. But we're taking turns. Building out a ministry resource blog post and taking the lead on presenting something that hopefully will be useful to a majority of our listeners. So what have you got cooking for us this week? We didn't really plan this super well because you're doing a ministry resource a couple days after your son was married, and I'll be doing one next week. A couple days after my daughter is married, but we are gluttons for punishment. That's not a surprise to anybody.
Maybe that's the perfect planning. Who knows? But I was happy to crank out a ministry resource on something brand new from our friends at Google, and it's called Be Internet Awesome. So you can head over to wellstech.wells.net and find an article specifically about it with lots of great links to resources around it. So the question of the hour is probably, what does it mean to be Internet Awesome? And I don't know, maybe maybe you feel like you're internet awesome already. I think lots of internet awesomeness happens on Wells Tech, for instance. But
once in a while, we catch lightning in a bottle. But
we hope.
Emphasis on the once in a while. Yeah. So tell us, Sally, what does it mean to be internet awesome?
The question of the hour, for sure. Be Internet Awesome is actually geared toward elementary age students, and it's basically a digital citizenship effort put out by Google. And there's a couple of different prongs to it, but from the kids' perspective, there's a video game that they've designed called Interland, and you can actually go there and surf your way through different areas of the internet represented in these different lands. I'm going to share my screen real quick for those who are watching. The different lands include things about kindness, about security, sharing information, all kinds of things like that. And there are different challenges in each of the lands. For instance, securing your secrets, and there's kind of a bad guy looking person that wants to get your secrets, and you have to play the game to get past him and secure them correctly. There's one on kindness, so kind of getting around bullying issues and things like that. So you can go to the Kind Kingdom and play those games. And then there's one on not falling for fake information on the internet. They call it Reality River. And as I said, you can click in and play these. It's a web-based game, so it works well on mobile devices as well as on desktop or Chromebook-type computers. And each of the areas has different games and game layouts. And there are instructions embedded there, but bottom line is they did a really great job with this, and they have engage students, I think, in a really good way with some great gaming techniques that they've built into it. So again, emphasis on those different areas, being smart and sharing with care, not falling for fake internet information, security, and kindness, or the opposite of bullying on the internet. And that's all from the kids' perspective, but coupled with that is a ISTE certified curriculum for teachers to use. So that was one of the main reasons to bring it up in the summertime, Martin, because teachers may want to do a little homework on this curriculum that's available to them.
Interesting. So one thing that always comes to mind when I look at things like this about, you know, citizenship, that's maybe how to act, how to relate to other people, especially coming from some of these large tech companies, is some of them have agendas when it comes to tolerance and lifestyles and those kinds of things. Did you notice anything like that in this tool? And that'd probably be an encouragement to anybody that's going to pick up some of these tools, that would be something that you'd want to certainly vet for and make sure that you're comfortable with the way things are being presented as well.
Yeah, I think that I didn't pick them up on that specifically. I think you'd have to, you know, use with care and be sensitive to that. But the curriculum is really focused on amplifying the kindness side of things, as well as staying away from the negativity. So not just being, you know, not just avoiding being negative online, but addressing underlying causes of negative behavior and things like that. So yeah, definitely be careful of those kind of things. Look at what they're defining as what's being positive, and make sure that you put a Christian perspective onto that. They really focus on a word called upstander. I saw that in a lot of places, someone who intervenes to stop or report inappropriate behavior. So they want the students to not be afraid to talk to trusted adults and share things if they feel like there's something that's not quite right in a situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks beautifully done, and I'm glad they're taking the time to do this, because online behavior, online citizenship, especially with the social networks of today, is something that we should be talking about with our kids, with our school kids, with each other, maybe even from our pulpits as we go out into this digital world and we can interact with so many different people, so many different kinds of people, so many different opportunities to share our Christian faith and be a Christian. I think putting the Christian flavor on top of these kinds of things has some great applications and opportunities for everybody, not just in not just teachers among us.
Definitely. They do bring in families into the discussion, as they have a Be Internet Awesome pledge that they shared. Again, you know, you want to be careful of legalism or whatever. You want to have discerning hearts here, but at least having these topics to discuss, you know, what should you share? What are you going to be responsible for in terms of phishing and scams and things like that? How to use security properly, and how to be kind and share positive behavior, as well as report negativity. All those things are good discussion topics, if not pledges that you want to make, but good guidelines to discuss. I think there's a real fine line there. We want to capitalize on all of the content that's available on the web for learning and growing and experiencing, you know, with our children. But we also want to be sure that they are aware of the dangers and they are taught maybe some of these societal type manners or things that they are taught in real world interactions, taught something parallel on the internet.
You have a sense for, is this a multi, if this were used in a curriculum, for instance, or in a classroom setting, would this be something that kids do on their own or something that is, you know, one of these areas a week or something as maybe extracurricular, or how do you see this being used best?
Yeah, for each of the areas, they have four, five, six activities around them. And not all are internet based. Many of them are discussion or looking at examples and things like that. So it's definitely something you could do perhaps in a quarter or sprinkle throughout the school year. But it's not just a, oh, let's talk about sharing and we're going to spend an hour on it and we're going to be done. You know, there's different activities and really each one of them leads up to the students using the Innerland software or website or whatever you want to call it, the game for mm-hmm. that particular area, and seeing if they can pass the quiz kind of things that are associated with Innerland, okay. the game.
Mobile friendly? Did you check that out?
Yeah, it definitely is mobile friendly. It's a web-based application. They actually have a separate resources page. And for those with Google Chromebooks in their school and Google Apps for Education. I'll just do one more quick screen share and show you their resource page where they have things like the curriculum and things listed, but also Innerland for school Chromebooks, where G Suite administrators can seamlessly make it available from their Chromebook taskbar in the admin console, Innerland for Google Classroom, where you can assign that specific tasks within Classroom to complete in the form of a class announcement. And then just digital safety courses. They have some posters, they have certificates and badges, and they even have a little paper internaut paper craft activity as well. So lots of different resources here. So if you're if you're a Google Apps school, you definitely want to check out some of those administrative type resources and perhaps incorporate it that way. And then at the bottom of the page, they have some additional resources outside of the Be Internet Awesome site, Parents Guide to Cybersecurity, Good Digital Parenting, Online Safety Roadshow, just lots of good stuff that they've put together from some of the groups sponsoring the effort, including the Family Online Safety Institute. So definitely check out the resources page. I think you'll find some valuable stuff there.
Very cool. Nice find.
Mm-hmm. Brand new from Google. So I guess maybe I can take my hat off to Rachel Pearson, who is one of our longtime contributors on the show, as she was the one whose tweet or Facebook post or something that I picked up on regarding this. But then it was kind of everywhere. She was just the first one that I saw that kind of reported this. So thanks, Rachel, for the lead.
Yeah, saw Rachel at Worship Conference last week. That was kind of nice.
Neat. And,
also, Rachel Fell, they were standing right next to each other. So, all right. So that's it for Ministry Resource. Just a reminder, go to the show notes page if you want more details about this or the blog post. We write a blog post each time. Did you do a video for this one?
Well, actually, Google did. They took care of my work on that. And there are actually two videos. One is just kind of an overview of the whole program, and then one is kind of a tour of Innerland, so you understand how to play your way to internet awesomeness.
And Google does some really nice educational or instructional, you know, how-to videos. So good. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move along to the next segment that we're doing in our abbreviated summer series, and that is our picks of the week, a little segment where Sally and I kind of select something that's meant something to our productivity or something interesting that we wanted to pass along, something new, something we're trying out. Could be a piece of hardware, software, website, tip, trick. What have you got this week?
Well, I guess I should do a shout out again to the Wells Google Schools community. I believe someone shared this on that community, and that's how I kind of got became aware of it. But it's from the blog Control Alt Achieve, which is run by a Google certified trainer and Google innovator, Eric Kurtz. And Eric shared 30 free Google Drawings graphic organizers. So again, kind of teacher oriented, you can use Google Drawing to draw out different ways to have students organize their thoughts on different assignments and things. So he has examples right here in the blog post of things like a word study diagram, a state or country research web where you're looking at different things about the people and the natural features and the cities and symbols and history and things. Here's one for five senses diagram where you put in a situation or scene and then describe what your five senses are feeling about that. And it goes on and on. He has just tons and tons of these graphic organizers. So, you know, there's kind of a twofold benefit from this. First of all, you get access to all the ones that he's already dreamed up, and you can easily share those. He just asks for attribution back to himself, but otherwise they're licensed under Creative Commons for all kinds of use and stuff. So you may just want to make use of these in your classroom, kind of go through and find some of the best ones that would fit different lessons you may be teaching in your classroom. But secondary to that, he actually teaches you a little bit about how to do it. There is a presentation you can view. He has an hour-long webinar that he's linked to in the instructions, and he kind of walks through how to make your own as well. He gives good reasons for using Google Drawings. They're easy to embed in lots of different things and easy to use. So like I said, you can use it even on a smart board type thing where you drag and drop and just make use of it as something already made up for you, or you can fill in the templates and then finally you can make your own. And he actually walks you through all the different ways to share and to create things from scratch and everything. So just an excellent resource, excellent detailed instructions that he's provided, and a whole list of graphic organizers organized by different subjects and types of things, projects that you might be doing, like drawings for games or drawings for writing or for desktop publishing, for math, just for graphic organization. And there's links to all of them there. I think I even have a link to the Google folder that everything is kept in. So a really great resource that Eric chose to share, and one I think could be valuable to many in classroom settings.
Neat. So I've always thought of graphic organizers as kind of a flavor of a mind map. Is that your impression?
I think maybe they came first, but yes, mind maps are flavor of graphic organizers perhaps, but you know, there's lots of different ways that you can organize yourself, and you know, we're real into the central topic and building off of that, but he's got so many different examples, cycles and steps, you know, progression and things like that. So lots of different ways you can get organized, but definitely very mind map parallel.
It seems like the Google infrastructure or ecosystem there is a good way to kind of bring all those together and just make use of them real quickly. Mm-hmm. If you need to just put them together for your classroom assignment, etc. So mm-hmm. Lots of ideas there too, I noticed.
Yeah.
All right. My pick of the week is a tip. And let me open up. Actually, I'm going to share my entire screen. This will look for those of you following along at home. This might look a little like Inception as you're seeing pictures and pictures and pictures. But so a blog post that, let me just move this up a little bit. A blog post called Mastering Three-Finger Gestures in Windows 10. If you're not familiar with the Windows Central website, it's maybe something, if you are a Windows user, especially a Windows 10 user, you may want to bookmark. They have a series here called 1, 2, 3, where they're talking about some base features. And this is one I found particularly useful. If you have a Windows 10 machine and you use the trackpad, this is not necessarily for mouse users, but if you use the trackpad, which I do quite a bit when I'm on the couch or using it at home or on the road, not necessarily in my office because I'm using a mouse, but there are gestures that make navigating Windows 10 a lot easier. And a three-finger gesture is one that you maybe want to memorize, and there's not a lot to it, but maybe I can just do a quick demonstration here. So if you take three fingers and you swipe down, it simply clears the entire screen and gets you back to your desktop. So that's sometimes useful when you need to get something off of your desktop or find a file, create a file, whatever. And then swiping up with those three fingers brings everything back. If you're on your desktop and you swipe up with three fingers, it will give you this multitask, I think they call it multitask mode, where you can, it shows all a screen representation of all the things going that are live or windows that are open on your desktop. And you can pick which one you want. So it's kind of a picker or a selector. Or if you swipe left or right, it allows you to go right to a, what I think usually comes up with Alt-Tab, if you're familiar mm-hmm. with that key combination, where you can go directly to another application in kind of a candy bar mode where you've got these in a horizontal list, and you can just swipe back and forth with your three fingers. And once you've highlighted the application that you want to open or the window that you want to reopen, you just let go and that window stays open. There are four-finger gestures that you can set up in Windows 10. You can do three-finger taps to open up specific applications. There's just a lot of different things that you have capabilities right within that trackpad that make navigating around your operating system a lot easier. I know Mac has a number of those as well, but I know a lot of people are just coming into Windows 10. This is maybe the summer that the school technology director or church technology director has decided, well, we're going to get off of Windows 7 or Windows 8, and this is the summer, so you may be jumping into Windows 10 for the first time. That's just one of those handy features that you probably want to be aware of that will make life just a little bit easier.
Does sound like some great shortcuts, and I'm always a fan of those. Martin, as you were describing it, and I probably missed this at the beginning, I was thinking you were touching the screen with your fingers, but you're talking about using the trackpad.
Trackpad, yeah. Screen does not work the same way. So if you have a touch screen, moving around with three fingers will not do anything. Although there are other gestures for the screen itself, maybe that'll be another tip in the future because that can be handy. There are different ways to close windows, open windows, et cetera, with gestures on the screen. But very they're not good. The same as those on the trackpad, okay. At least not by default.
Good to know. Excellent. Right.
We do have a little bit of community feedback. Our friend Mike Hartman sent us a couple of emails. One of the emails he forwarded was something called Top 100 Tools for Education, Top Tools for Learning in 2016. And just kind of a laundry list of applications that I think teachers should be aware of, that many of them are going to be very familiar. It starts off with things like YouTube and Google Docs and PowerPoint and Google Search and Twitter, Dropbox, those kinds of things. There are some on the latter half of the list that I had to explore a little bit, and maybe some things that you would discover might be useful to you. Some of these we've mentioned before, but there are a number that I had not heard of. So if you're looking for a little bit of introduction to new tools that might be helpful in your classroom, this is a great list.
It is a great list. It's from my friend Jane Hart, and I had to smile when I saw the top tools for learning because I recognized it right away. And if you're a longtime Wells Tech listener, you might recognize it as well. I had to look back, but I definitely mentioned the top tools for learning back in 2008 and 2009, and Jane's been doing it that long. This is actually her 10th year of producing this list, and she does it in a really neat way. You go out and take a survey and submit what your top maybe five tools are or something like that, and then she compiles it all based on the survey responses from educators around the world to come up with this list. And I think what's exciting about it is that she's done it for so long, you can see things moving up and down on the list over the years. So if you're looking at my screen where you see YouTube is number one, it was also number one last year. But Google Docs and Drive was number five last year, and it's moved up to number two on the list. And some of the more telling ones, like Explain Everything was number 95 last year, and it's number 62. So some that have really soared up the list to be super popular. Maybe in the top 20, Google Apps for Education was number 40 last year, and now it's number 19. So you can kind of see trends over time by looking at it that way. So a really excellent tool, and she's got more on her website than just that. And she has a link to vote for 2017. So if you want to participate in the top list for 2017, you can go there and put your two cents into the bucket as well.
Mike also shared, he's on furlough, I think, and was attending a conference, and one of the conference presenters, an educator, was talking about green screen technology, and I believe the presenter shared with the attendees a Google site that they had put together. This is Green Screen with Camtasia, I believe. And talks about the different techniques available, lots of sample videos. And if you are interested in kind of amping up your videos, if you're doing flipped classrooms or whatever, or you know, have other uses for video that might have a background that you'd like to be more creative with, I think these are a bunch of great resources here that you may want to take a look at.
I agree, Martin. I thought this was really cool. The first video on her sample page, she talks about giving a VIP tour, and she has like a catalog, or I guess it's probably a Cadillac, a limousine in the background that she's inviting you into for your VIP tour. So this makes it more fun and more creative to do this kind of thing. There are other examples. As you progress down the page, she has a video where she's kind of a talking head in it for demo day and all kinds of things like that. So I think she's done a really good job with it. She goes on to share some resources and the slides that she used as she talked about this. And so you can actually get the instructions that she shared right there on this page. So do you have a green screen, Martin?
Do not. I think our communications director would love to have one because our live stream box, the newest version, I think supports green screen technology. But I was impressed that Camtasia actually had this. You kind of think of Camtasia as more the screen sharing or screen recording app, but it has more capabilities than that, apparently.
Yeah, definitely. The Draper's on a green screen. It's not a very large one, and one of the keys is having a really large one. But I was thinking about being at Bethany Lutheran College, where they have a lot of emphasis on video production as one of their majors. Yeah, and they have like a green room, don't they, where the floor and the walls and everything are painted green. One of the challenges is getting good lighting so that it's evenly done.
Right, you don't want any shadows. Green.
Yeah. But fun stuff to play with. We've done a little bit with it. It's a lot of fun.
So how did you get your? How did you get a green screen? Did you create one? Buy one?
We bought it. We've had it for quite a while, and it came with some software. I can't remember which video editing software, but we got the green material along with the software.
So what have you used it for?
I'll have to dig up a video. We did some family fun stuff. Like we put a fifth head on Mount Rushmore and put it behind the kids and all kinds of fun stuff like that. So
Draper kind of stuff.
That's right. Yeah. It was a long time ago before they ever dreamed of getting married and leaving their mom.
I don't know if you're going to get over that, Sally.
I don't know. Feeling
all right. Do we have any more feedback?
Just one more thing to mention, and that's a post over on the Wells Tech Google group, which is a great place to ask questions and get answers. Pastor Steve Daly was asking about suggestions for live streaming and what kind of camera audio type setup would be best. At his congregation, they've been using an iPad for live streaming, and they're just looking for the next step. And so I know there are listeners out there who have done this, who have set up some great solutions for live streaming, and Pastor Daly would benefit from your knowledge. So head on over to our Google groups and give him an answer.
And he was specifically looking for Final Web live streaming. They use the live streaming product from Final Web, which we should probably remind our listeners once in a while that that exists, that our good friends at Final Web have made that available for some time. And you were one of the first users there when you were at St. John's, I think.
That's right. We used it in Sleepy Eye. And after being on an ad-based live streaming service, like I want to say we were using Ustream, but Google would be the same. If you're live streaming with them, you don't have control over what ads they're popping up in front of your viewers. And to go to that clean interface for your users or viewers of your live stream was just a huge bonus for us. The pricing was well below industry standards for that kind of service.
Right. And worked well.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Speaking of video, we do have a featured video even in our summer series. And speaking of Mike Hartman.
We have a video from Mike Hartman, an update on Academia Cristo, which is the Spanish outreach site that they do all kinds of courses through, and a lot of it is done online instead of face-to-face. Although in this update, he reports on both face-to-face and online outreach and classes and things. So really exciting to see the work there in Latin America continue, and you'll enjoy this. The words on the screen are in Spanish, but Mike did a voiceover in English for us that don't know Spanish. So
us gringos. Yes.
That's the word I was looking for. I don't know Spanish, so I couldn't come up with that.
Good thing that we have two people on this podcast.
That's because, true, for many reasons.
It'd be either one of us by ourselves is no picnic. So, all right. I'm glad you're here, Sally, and back. And again, congratulations. We're going to return next week with another ministry resource. I'll be up and freshly empty nested. So I've been empty nested for a long time, but at least it'll be official now that all three kids will be married out of the house and on their own and paying their own bills. That's the best part,
I think.
For the most part. But I'm going to be focusing on, and this is kind of tentative, but I'm pretty convinced that we probably need to do a ministry resource talking about iPads. Apple released some new iPads recently, so I'll be talking about iPads for ministry and maybe give you, you pastors or teachers out there, if you think that an iPad might be useful for your ministry, maybe some ammunition so you can go to your church council or school board and say, hey, this is why this might be helpful for me. So tune in next week for that. If you want to contribute to the show, we do have this community feedback section that we sprinkle in throughout the summer. We would be glad to get your feedback, suggestions for topics in future shows or interviews. Feedback from things that we've mentioned, just go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. We have a fresh coat of paint on that website, and would love for you to visit and take a look at all the different ways you can communicate with us up in the upper right, and I think it's even on the bottom. It's impossible to not know how to get in touch with us, or you can leave a comment on any of the episodes. This is where you also will find our ministry resources as well. So take a gander there, and we would love for you to visit. And of course, come back next week and bring a friend or two as well. That's going to do it for the show this week. Thank you, Sally. Congratulations again. And we'll talk to all of you next week. Have a blessed week. Bye-bye.